You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
You're listening to the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast, and really excited here to have a friend of the show, a friend of the podcast, Greg Clifford. I always refer back to a kind of happenstance contact with Six of One, Half a Dozen the Other podcast, a troupe of artists in Dublin, many of them who you've met on the show, Rachel Lally, Jeff Finan. Emin O'Brien is on the way eventually. We got Greg Clifford here on the heels of some new music and a little bit of press going on. Greg, welcome to the show. It's been a long time waiting for you to get here, and we're here. Welcome
it's
to the show.
It's been a while, but we've landed. It's great to talk to you, man. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely, my pleasure. I know right now, you got some music. Gorgeous song, by the way. We're gonna play "Long Lost Friend" for the listeners in a little bit. So, you know, I know you're in that kind of, you know, making art, getting the word out there, putting things together. Beautiful video. You're doing those things. So, what's it like right now for you? You know, putting out that music, doing that type of thing. How's it feel for you?
Well, as of this moment right now, I feel excellent. I'm a little bit fatigued. I'm a little bit almost overstimulated, you know what I mean, with all the positive energy and positive feedback I'm getting. But, you know, like things are good. The response has been excellent. I'm genuinely bowled over and floored. And just really, I really appreciate how people have taken to it. Because, you know, the thing is, you put a lot of work in. And there's a lot of times, you know, where doubt creeps in. And self-deprecation, and moments like these, days like these, as fleeting as they might be, they kind of vindicate you. So, you know, look, the pandemic has taught me anything. It's be in the present moment, try to reside in the present moment, and appreciate whatever good things come your way. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, I gotta say, you know, it's a way to connect, right? I'm over here in the States, all the way on the West Coast, and you know, been connecting to the art that you make over there. And I think part of the podcast, what's been interesting, is maybe to drop in over time into, I don't know, like a local scene or what local artists are doing or what sounds that are out there. And I know from you know, artists around the world, and I know in Ireland there's been particular issues to work through about access, opening, creating things, and a lot of political controversy around that. Same over here. What I'm seeing here is that now with, you know, some levels of vaccine access, the thought that things will open up or there'll be some sort of structured kind of music out there is in Ireland right now. Is there kind of welled up energy around music, or how are people feeling about where things are in this stage in the pandemic and performance?
You know, things were kind of tough for people because we went into a level 5 lockdown, like a serious lockdown, just after Christmas. We're still currently in it, and we have a 5-kilometer radius, so we're very, very restricted. And then, of course, couple that with the fact that the days have been shorter, less sunlight, bad weather. But there has been a communal low, you know, so that has been a challenge on people. I even found myself at the start of the year just a little bit out of sorts, you know, like usually I'm good at exerting some kind of control over that. And reaching kind of a stable equilibrium, but I think my resilience was just low at the time, so it's been rather peculiar. But at the moment, I'm trying to maintain a positive disposition because I'm trying to not look too far into the future and just go, well, what do I have now? Well, what I have is encouraging friends, supportive friends, challenging friends. My family are good. I'm healthy. I'm productive. I have a lust for art, a drive. I don't know exactly where it comes from, but I appreciate that I have it. So, I'm just trying to be in the present moment, you know what I mean? And using this time. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible time for an artist. As Charles Bukowski once said, isolation is the gift. Now, a little bit extreme, but I have had time, devoid of distraction, to see to my creative to-do list.
Yeah. Hey, and Greg, we got a Bukowski quote from you already, so we're already at 100. So we're, everything's gravy right now. We got the Bukowski quote. Hey, want to get back? Want to get into some of the philosophy? One more thing about the music to tell listeners. We got the variety, first variety something rather than nothing podcast episode, and a lot of great music and some from you, Greg. We'll have some local artists in Portland, a couple Canadian artists, Ireland. So it'll be a kind of an international music variety show. So listeners, you'll have another crack at getting some of Greg's music. But Greg, let's go back in the way back in the Back to the Future time machine, back to when you were younger. I mean, were you walking around singing in the streets? Were you writing poetry? Were you an artist? What were you like creatively back then?
You know, I'd say it began for me back in 1987 in my mother's womb. You know, that my dad, my parents were pretty music crazy. So no doubt I was picking up some kind of vibrations, like literally from day one. I've never known anything other than, you know, interesting sounds and vibrancy in the household. Like before I could even walk or talk or function, I was able to actually take a record, a vinyl out of a sleeve and put it on the turntable. And the two albums I always went to was Harvest Moon by Neil Young and Sgt. Pepper's by the Beatles. They were my two go-tos. So like, I was always fascinated with music. Before I could talk or function or do anything, I was picking up squash and tennis rackets and pretending to be playing guitar. It was a very vibrant household to grow up in, where any kind of creative or musical leanings or interest that was expressed was very much fostered right from the get-go. So it was kind of, I was bitten by the bug and there was no way out, you know. It was kind of always almost determined, shall we say, but never forced on me, just all very organic.
Yeah, it was kind of the environment. And thanks for sharing that. I'm always pretty darn fascinated as far as, you know, the climate that you come out of, you know, and parents and relatives, or you know, the aunt or the uncle that's the rock star, or like what you attach to, as far as art goes. I wanted to ask a big question getting into art, because, you know, I know you're a heavy hitter when it comes to philosophy. I know you're a heavy hitter when it comes to music. I was wondering what is art? What do you think art is for you?
Well, I suppose the definition of it has evolved and changed for me over the years. But like, as I sit here right now, I realize that it is very much life. It is very much expression, connection with others. Like on a personal level, it's therapy. It's cathartic to write. Then say for the listener, it offers comfort at times. It offers reinforcement. It's just an incredibly powerful thing. I mean, it even helps you to reconnect to the past. I mean, if you think about people who have dementia or Alzheimer's, where you can spark memories back and put them in a place. You know, even the other day I was listening to Nick Cave and Warren Ellis. They have a new album out. A track.
I didn't know they had a new album.
Yeah, Nick Cave is just—he's a freak, isn't he? He's just incredibly prolific. But that track, Carnage, it just stopped me in my tracks. I was doing some admin, and it just. I had my headphones on and I just got lost in it. Very simple song, but the strings and the cinematic choir, like it actually moved me to tears, which is incredible. There's just such power in music. And aside from the kind of the aural pleasure that it gives you, it is also my gateway, or has been anyway, pre-pandemic, into interesting conversations, into new projects, new plans, new people, new countries. So it's just, it is life. Sometimes I feel I almost live vicariously through the entity that is, or the force that is music.
Yeah. Yeah. And thanks for mentioning I'm a kind of a Nick Cave freak. I mean, if you like Nick Cave, you end up being a Nick Cave freak.
That's it. Absolutely. Yeah. You're fully committing, fully fledged in the deep end.
Yeah. There's, you know, the birthday party, and it's good to hear that some new music. I find, you know, one of the things about that too is one of the things I've been thinking about, and actually your new track made me think about it. And you mentioned Nick Cave. I'm deeply attached to deeper emotional content of music. It just grabs me, the emotion. Like, how do you connect emotionally with music, and it's transformative? There's no other art form for me, though I practice other art forms and consume a lot, that drives into the soul like a song or music does, an emotional. Do you, as this is a question I'm really kind of learning from you, that comes out in your music and the emotional content. Is that something you have to, as a songwriter, as a musician, do you have to go in there and be like, try to create that, or is that just a natural flow coming for you? We're connecting human to human with the emotion that comes through your words.
Yeah, I suppose it does vary from artist to artist. But for me, actually, another thing that art is, it's a means of punctuating my day, my weeks, my months, my years. It's a way of documenting my life. And on a, you know, on a kind of a darker or heavier level, it is a means of just kind of filling in time, giving me some kind of purpose. Like, I would have, you know, we all have existential angst and questions and that kind of the heaviness of the staring into the abyss and the abyss looking back at you. So yeah. A lot of that uncertainty that I have or anguish, I truly pour into the music, into the songs, into the lyrics. You know, like, I can't sing lyrics that don't mean something to me. Now, that's not to say every single song is full-blown autobiographical, but it is something that I care about or that I want to express, or that maybe on a subconscious level I just want to make sense of at that time of writing. You know, so, and I really do give myself over completely to the recording process as well, and I don't like to cut corners. I am a grafter at heart. Like, I'm certainly not an innate talent as such, or like an incredibly gifted child. I had musicality and good rhythm, but I had to work hard, and I still endeavor to work hard and improve, you know, with each song and each project.
Yeah, you know, that theme does come up. We haven't developed it a ton in the show, but it always comes up about, you know, the talent and, you know, the hard work that goes into it. And it very rarely is an either or, right? I mean, you can have a ton of talent, but you still have to work your ass off. I mean, where you're positioned in society, what your access is to recording, what the city you live in, or if you're in the, you know, somewhere far away from access. So all those issues come up. Greg, what's the role of art right now? Is art more important now? Is art less important? Or is art just art, and it doesn't matter whether it's a pandemic or not?
Yeah, see, the thing is, I think it changes. The importance of art shifts a lot, you know what I mean? Like, it depends what art form it is as well. And like, maybe on some level, like, if to remove the kind of the higher realm of art, it also provides entertainment for people. It provides a soundtrack to some people's day. Okay, it could be sometimes a little bit disposable because of that, but it provides people with an escape route. It provides people with a gateway into interesting conversations with other people. You know, I suppose on some level, that's what the art provides now. And maybe it's doing that more so than it was before. Maybe even people might have a heightened appreciation of it when things open back up. Hopefully so.
Yeah, what maybe kind of what helps you get through, right? I mean, the people, yeah, I mean, that expression, you know, that people are closely connected to music. You know, I've saw it, there's a book or a blog or something, the songs that saved your life, right? Mm. The songs that, like, you cling onto, and a lot of artists talk about that. And I think the pandemic has been just as much about that for some folks. What is the art that you cling to? Who is the person that you cling to? What is the concept or belief or faith that you cling to? And I've seen artists having a particular role of saying, you know, screaming out into the microphone, this is a fucked up time. And other people being like, yeah, the dude who's screaming into the microphone saying it's a fucked up time, that's hitting me. Or a lament. And I found that helps
yeah,
carry some folks through, right?
I've kind of found it a very, as I say, existential time, a very humbling time in which I really realize the transient nature of the world and the impermanence too, you know? And that's not a cause for, you know, great despair and nihilism. More so I kind of use that as quite an empowering thing, because that makes me really realize I've got a limited amount of time on this planet. And I wish to illuminate myself through art. And, you know, now in my 30s, in my early 30s, it's like, well, I've kind of settled into the person that I am. I'm not trying to defy certain aspects of myself, you know. You know, before in the past, I fixated on what I didn't have and what I wasn't, but I'm trying to change that mindset now. And because of that, I found myself more content and even more productive now, really.
There's a little bit of a freeing in that. And yeah, I know, I mean, as far as you develop over time, I mean, I think one of the interesting things for myself is that, like, formally identifying or creating things is really something I look at myself only done for the last 3 years or so. You know, I started at 45, I'm 48 now. So, like, you know, what you need at the time, what you need to do at the time to help process, I found it for me, it ended up being so powerful of what I needed to say or express that it had to come out through art. But I didn't anticipate that. I didn't anticipate there'd be like that well back behind me. And I know a lot of people have that in kind of in them right now. In the pandemic, like, what's inside of me and how the hell can I get it out, right?
Yeah. Do you know, I really appreciate that I have the outlet also. Because for some people, like, it can be frustrating when you feel very much in a prison or you feel like you can't express or even articulate. You know, that can be a challenge. But I know a lot of people who've been, you know, just getting into painting and journaling. I think writing is important. And it's not even about having to get it published or performed or anything like that. Just to get it on paper can just be so important. It can be just so very important for the soul and the mind.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, everybody, I'm in the position right now with Greg Clifford that I have music that I want to play. And anytime I have a musician on, I can't wait too long because I'm like, I got this thing behind me and I want to hear it. So, hey, Greg, we're going to play your new track, Long Lost Friend, and share that with the listeners. Beautiful song. We're going to get back and chat about a little bit more about music and philosophy. But right now we got Long Lost Friend by Greg Clifford.
Lost friend, I will be back again. Oh, a long lost friend, I will be back again. Oh, you see, sometimes in life you need to survive, you need to hold your head high, reach to the sky. You see, sometimes in life you need to get away. Oh, I had to leave this place, I left tonight, I had to break free, I didn't damage in mind. But I hope you'd understand, oh, hope you'd understand that I left you all behind as a means to an end. Now you're a long lost friend, I will be back again. Ooh. A long lost friend, I will be back again. Ooh. Said I fear the will to you, my friend. I give you all the love that I can send. You're a long lost friend, I will be back again. And I know that I'm again. Someday I'll try to reunite with all the pieces that I lost, all the pieces that I may find. I see the world for me and how it turns, and how it hurts and how it hurts. I'm sure you heard it all before. I'm not the first to walk out the door. Home is where the heart roams free. Escape this mess, cause words cut deep. I hope you'd understand, I hope you understand that I left you all behind as a means to an end. You're a long, long stray, and I will be. back again. Ooh, a long lost friend, and I'll be back again. Ooh, I send my fairy well to you, my friend. I give you all the love that I can send.
Track, brother.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Beautiful song. And thank you for that. That's the new single, right?
That is, yeah, that's the fresh single. It's it's the lead single off the album. The album is called Lines of Desire. And so that's Long Lost Friend.
Absolutely wonderful. Hey, one of the things I wanted to tell you that is an interesting little story that I'm sharing with my Irish friends. I was looking at my family history, and you do those DNA testing, and they tell you there's a DNA testing, your family tree, and all this stuff. And I come from how shall I put it? An American New England working class ethnic mix.
Okay.
And my last name's Vellante, but I got to tell you, predominantly through my family research and DNA, I am more Irish than anything.
Wow.
So there you have it. Maybe the closer connection my Irish brother here, Greg Clifford, is.
That's it. Maybe I'm bringing something out of you, and there's just this gravitational pull that we're powerless to defy.
It's like Aristotle said that, the stone wants to go back to the earth. It didn't know about gravity. It wants to go back to like where it was before. And I'm doing my podcast with my Irish family.
That's amazing. For a small country, the Irish really spread themselves. We're stone spreaders.
I worked in Boston in electrical workers union, and I had a lot of Irish brother friends in South Boston. It was great.
A lot of is that your way of saying a lot of drinking buddies?
South Boston Irish.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Greg. Hey, another question, kind of a formation question, and answer it how you will. Whether it's art or a thing or who has made you who you are?
Well, I truly believe I am the synthesis of every single thing I've ever lived, like every single conversation, as important or as inane, every, good, bad, or indifferent piece of music or film. Now, of course, there's other, there's stronger influences, and they would be most certainly my dad. He is an innate artist. He was a former performance artist. He used to put on different shows. He had a music magazine called The Vox Magazine from 1980 to 83. Played in a band, used to put on gigs, did some graphic design. So I was bitten by the bug. Like, even at a young age, I used to watch him draw and do graphic design and artwork for T-shirts. He was a printer also. So I always looked up to him. And he was obviously a self-employed man. So, again, it's no surprise that myself and my brother kind of followed that path. Musically, the main influences, like the major one is the Beatles. And I've always loved their pop sensibilities, but also the rich textures, the rich orchestration. But they blended that together so majestically. And then, like, you know, things changed. I got into Rory Gallagher, you get into the Doors, the Kinks, started with Zeppelin for a bit, Pink Floyd. That blew my mind when I first heard Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah.
But as I, you know, developed more as a person and actually developed my mind and my ability to write lyrics, that came away from the music. And that would have been more dipping the toes into literature. So sometime around the age of 18 or 19, I started to attempt the works of Camus and the likes of William Burroughs. Now, I remember reading Junkie by William Burroughs, and I didn't really get it. I wasn't a very good reader. I found it quite arduous, actually, to be honest. But I was like, this is an investment. This will stand to me eventually, you know? Eventually, you know, the Doors of Perception will open. And actually, the Doors of Perception by Aldous Huxley was a fantastic read and was a further gateway into just unlocking just different potential, I guess, broadening my horizon of possibility. That's what it was.
Potential.
You know, exactly, yeah. And then, I suppose, away from literature, film, like movies, they seriously influence me and move me now, possibly even more than music. And I guess one of my heroes has to be Werner Herzog, the German filmmaker and documentarian. I just love his aesthetic, his unapologetic way, even in his documentaries. I know he gets criticized, but sometimes he blurs the lines of what's fact and fiction, and he creates a spectacle. I think it was Bells of Desire. Maybe I'm mixing up titles here, but it was set in Syria or Siberia, and it's just kind of like, you don't know, is it fabrication or is it fact, but it's quite a stunning visual project and just production.
It's interesting you mentioned Herzog, and it's a little uncanny our conversation, because I'm actually not even sure which of these artists that I deeply love and enjoy and can go down the rabbit hole to pick on or to pick.
Yeah.
But Herzog, I was just talking to somebody about, I love Herzog's maniacal mind.
Yeah.
I love the blurring. I love the, you don't know where you are and where the boundary is. You just don't know. I'm not saying morally that's correct. I don't, that's not the question that's addressed. It's disruptive. Yeah. And I find his works to be of such intensity. And, you know, I remember the one, I don't know if you've ever seen it, the documentary about his relationship with Klaus Kinski, My Best Fiend. Yeah. Where Herzog is across the ridge looking at the hut that Kinski, in all his madness, inhabits, and is planning out firebombing and destroying his lead actor.
Yeah, yeah.
And you listen to him and you think it's real.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's a real sickness that the man is, he's one of a kind. He's madcap. He's a maverick. Like, I just find his work stunning, you know. As you say, it's very, there's just a real rawness and intensity. And there's imperfections, you know. And it's very human. And like when you're watching it, like, you know, when you watch Fitzcarraldo, you kind of forget that you're watching a film. You kind of go, wait a second, there's no special effects here. They made this happen. So almost the art form elevates from just what's being displayed on the screen. But it's almost the art form of his ability to weave his way in with situations and an environment. Like, he had to befriend the indigenous people of the Amazon to actually help him pull a ship over a mountain with a series of pulley lever systems. Like, that is just unheard of. Like, how could you not be moved by that? Again, it's a little bit like the Nick Cave thing. If you watch it or you listen and you go, this isn't for me, you kind of just leave it. But if it does call out to you, you end up completely immersed in it.
My favorite final bit on Herzog, and we'll probably do another podcast, maybe we'll dedicate it to him. But I love the title of his diary of the making of Fitzcarraldo. I actually have it. It's called The Conquest of the Useless.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? Actually, that was a book, one of the tracks on my forthcoming album called Redemption. I really liked the instrumental that I had, but it was getting to like 3 weeks before I had to go into the studio for the first day of recording. And I didn't have the song finished, but I knew it had great potential. So I grabbed 3 books from my collection to try and just trigger some ideas. One was Exile from the Kingdom, or Exile and the Kingdom. One was from a philosopher called Michael Foley, called The Age of the Absurd. And the other one was Conquest of the Useless.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It just triggered me, and it just went, well, you got to do it now. This is it. Just get stuck in. And yeah, and something came. Actually, a song that I'm very proud of lyrically emerged.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I love that background. I'm going to connect with that. It's good. Yeah, the intensity. I hear a lot of the similarity of as far as the intensity of some of the artists that we follow. I got a couple more big questions for you, Greg. And
lay them on me. Lay them on me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. One is, and it's this large question for artists, and it's a big philosophical question. Is like, why do you create? You're looking for immortality. Are you looking for psychological exegesis? What is it? Why do you go in there and do it all?
Yeah, do you know? Yeah, you tipped on something there. It's there could well be, and I don't think this is my motive, but kind of trying to defy our impermanence, possibly trying to kind of, you know, give the fingers up to death. It's like, well, I've left something. I've left my mark. My name could still hopefully be remembered or still influence others down the line. But, you know, it really comes to what is the meaning of life anyway. And the thing is, there is no fundamental meaning of life. Well, on an animalistic level, it's to procreate. But we have, you know, we've risen above, say, that base level animal now. You know, we're a brilliant ape. But so I think I have to look at it as a meaning thing. And I realize now that there's no divine meaning as such. Meaning is more a man-made creation, and meaning comes from the self. So for me, it's just to chase and respond to whatever calls out to me, you know, like respond to impulse, trust intuition, whatever illuminates me. I try not to overthink it too much and just do it, just be engaged in the act of doing. Because that's all I ever really want, is just to be engaged in a discipline. And a lot of times it actually keeps the negativity or any kind of lingering depression or worry about the afterlife or the nothingness of afterlife. It keeps that at bay. It keeps me engaged in the present.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. I got the big philosophical question coming after this one. And for the setup, I want to ask you a half-witted American question that I asked Brother Jeff Finan. Okay, so I'm gonna half-witted American question, outsider. Are banshees real?
Banshees? Well, they can be after a lot of putching. You can start to, you know, right, start to hear voices. Yeah, I've experienced a few banshees in my time when I've succumbed to the delirium tremors.
So banshees might as well be real in this scenario.
Yeah. Sometimes we, you know, there's horrors that linger in the backgrounds of our mind, and a certain psychosis, when one overindulges,
that's
by one of them.
I shouldn't even have to ask the question. In the past, I met a few banshees. All right, big question, Greg Clifford, Dublin, Ireland. Why is there something rather than nothing?
But you know what? I suppose it depends on the frame of reference, because even to say if there was nothing, that's still a state of somethingness, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
Like, how does one imagine nothing? Is it something that's transparent? Is it something that's white? Is it something that's empty and large and vast? It's very difficult to get outside of our frame of reference, our very myopic frame of reference, actually. And that can be scary, to think about that. Like, I remember getting hit with that kind of idea of like what comes next, and wait, my parents are going to be gone, like we all do. But it hit me sometime around the age of 6. I just remember crying for days. I was like, this is terrifying. It's like everything is so large and I'm so small in the world. But look, I take some comfort in the fact that I didn't know what it was like to not exist or to not be tangibly in the world. So I believe that I'll be okay when I'm not in this tangible realm as well, because I probably just won't know about it, you know? So why is there something rather than nothing? Well, I guess, you know, you know, the easy thing is, like, I suppose there has to be something. Like, it's even like, why do one's art in the first place? So I think it goes beyond my puny mind. But I do find it interesting, because I'm sure, you know, the notions of the afterlife that we have, and I would never knock religion for the comfort that it gives people. I would certainly knock religion for how it's been enforced on people and the suppression of the individual over the years. But, you know, it does offer comfort to people. But it's still, again, within our man-made frame of reference. Like, I'm sure there is things that are vast and that go way, way, way beyond our comprehension. But, I mean, within that, you got to think, like, there is no great truth that we're necessarily privy to, or I don't believe there is. So, again, it sounds a little bit kind of wild and a little bit nihilistic, but I kind of take strength and empowerment from that it's like, well, one's way is just a way among many. So things may, patterns form, patterns have to form, you know. So, you know, they're imagined orders. Money, monogamy, capitalism, religion, it's all man-made, man-altered.
Now we're getting there. Now we're getting there.
But I think, you know, you're hitting me, you're coaxing me into a stream of consciousness here, KB. I think, you know, as things are now, again, just not being able to look too far into the future, like, eventually things will blow over and there'll be vaccines and there'll be gigs and there'll be traveling and the communion of a gig and an audience can blossom again. But as I say, I have to just be fixated in the present moment. So there's something very grounded about us all and me now. I don't have that Descartes Cartesian mindset of, you know, a body and the mind in the world. Not at the moment, anyway. Well, unless you get a little bit of encouragement from narcotics along the way.
there's the subject-object duality. And one of the things we've talked about, like, in Something Rather Than Nothing is, like, you know, there's this, like, kind of Western duality. I've tried to infuse and just think about, like, Eastern religions in, you know, some of our Western constructs. And I find it to be fertile area, in particular for artists. And, you know, philosophers and thinkers like yourself and, you know, musicians, I mean, you're thinkers. You're creating things. You're putting things out there. You're making a guess on the big question. Otherwise, you wouldn't bother. I mean, you wouldn't bother with any of that stuff. We're going to, listeners, we're going to be hearing, again, Greg Clifford in the Music Variety Show coming up. Very, very excited about that. Greg, but before we let you go, I really want all the listeners to be able to connect with your music, the video, how you produce things. Where do they go to find you? I know you're pretty accessible. Can you lead the listeners to where they need to look?
Yeah, I suppose the best landing point would be Instagram. So it's very simply just Instagram.com/ Greg Clifford Music, GREG. CLIFFORD, music spelled the correct way. So that's easy enough. Facebook, I'm the same. I'm Greg Clifford Music. There is a gregcliffordmusic.com. I have a number of videos throughout the years up on my YouTube. I'm obviously on Spotify as well. But there is another Greg Clifford in the world who is almost like the evil Greg Clifford. He's the antithesis of this one. But no, but it's very easy to see. You know, you can when you see a picture of me on my Spotify artist ID, you'll know it's me. It's just funny. There's another Greg Clifford out there. He doesn't produce music anymore, it would seem. And as I said, like I say it kind of in a facetious way, the antithesis, but he's like, it's dance music. And there's a, like, he has an album called Demonic Souls. That wouldn't really be my bag, you know? But it's very funny. I was doing a landscaping gardening job one time, let's say about 5 or 6 years ago. And the young guy, there was an 8-year-old, 9-year-old in the house. And he was telling me that he was really into music. I was like, oh, that's fantastic that you're into that. And do you play, or what do you listen to? So he was telling me he's into, Harry Potter soundtracks. And I was like, oh, check me out on Spotify, Greg Clifford, and come back to me tomorrow and tell me what song you like. Then he comes out to me and he goes, oh, I found you. And he shows me his tablet. And he's like, I love this song, Demonic Souls. I was like, what's Demonic Souls? I was like, yeah, you must. That doesn't sound like me. I looked at it and he had found the other Greg Clifford. So his favorite Greg Clifford song wasn't even from this one.
He liked the other Greg Clifford. He liked the other Greg Clifford. It's like in Twin Peaks. It's not knowing the other Greg Clifford, respect to whatever's going on there. But it's like Twin Peaks. It's like, you get the Dale Cooper in the one lodge and you get the other Dale Cooper running around between the universes and the doppelgangers and topas. And
I know, man. Maybe there was just a glitch in the system. Look, I'll tell you another quick one. This one is even crazier. I released Brontide and a music video for Brontide in around November, and I posted it privately, not publicly on YouTube, just to test it out and see was it okay. So I did an incognito search to make sure it wasn't for public consumption, and then I saw Greg Clifford Brontide pop up, and I was like, what's beatcore? Clicked on it. It turns out this other Greg Clifford, back in February of whatever 2013, had already released a song called Brontide. Now that blew my mind. Because the word Brontide is, that's not commonplace. It's the
You got to Google it.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those kind of words. So I was thinking, I've got a good thing going here. So I'm not even the first Greg Clifford to release Brontide. Now that blew my mind.
What's Brontide meet again?
It's the sound of distant thunder. And it's actually seismic activity, but it's like a low rumble. So for me, that's it represents kind of impending doom and gloom or some kind of tragedy, which is the case with that song then, because the song is about fading memories, not being able to get access to your memories. It alludes to dementia.
Incredible. So there's two Greg Clifford Brontides. One is yours, and the low rumbling, the low rumbling of thunder, right?
Yeah, and it's almost heartbreaking seeing that. I mean, I have to laugh at it, but it's almost like he wasted such a beautiful word, because the song or the piece just goes do 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 do. It's devoid of melody. It's devoid of a display of musicality. It's just a waste of a word. But it's a decent anecdote for me.
It's a decent anecdote for me, and that's what the artist needs. Greg, it's been a great pleasure to chat with you. I got to tell you, personally, excited, to hear the song and see the video, and also, just me trying to with the music variety episode, something new, something to kind of create a little community, a little bit of a mix of musical styles from around the world. And I'm very happy and just pleased to have your contributions to that, but also to have spent the time with you here today. I know we share a lot of ways of looking at the world, or artists that we see the world through. And I really appreciate and really enjoy spending the time with you. And just really thanks for coming on, brother.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. Honestly, I didn't see the time go by there. We could chat all day.
We can. This is part one, because I know we got like Bukowski, Burroughs, Nick Cave, Werner Herzog, and others that we still got to cover. We did pretty good on Herzog.
That was a good kind of overview. I'm working on a novel at the moment. I didn't even get to address that.
Well, address it now. We need to know what you'd like to hear about it.
The book is about my time performing and touring in Switzerland with a parody trad rock Irish band, and it's about the trials and tribulations and the roguish behavior or whatever. It's a fusion of fact, fiction, and fabrication, and it's in quite a, well, I'm trying to kind of base it on a you know, Bukowski, Hunter S. Thompson, kind of Jim Carroll Basketball Diaries way, in that I wouldn't be, it doesn't appeal to me to write something like a Mark Twain, you know? But for me, I like that gritty, the gritty literature. I like colloquialisms. I like short, sharp sentences. And it's a hell of an undertaking, but it's entitled The Diary Entries of a Somewhat Degenerate.
I love it. And huge Hunter S. Thompson fan. I love his political analysis. Love his style.
Oh, and of course, sorry, with the style, Ken. I like that there's that blurring of the lines of, is this actually a life that they lived, told true to their alter ego? You know, the way Bukowski has Henry Chinaski and Thompson has Rel Duke, isn't it? Well, my alter ego is Pádraig O'Rafferty, which is a very, you know, cliched Irish kind of name.
I've heard about that guy.
So it's quite interesting. Again, it kind of alludes to that duality and indulge in your fantasies and indulge in your wilder side. Like, I used to really pretend that I was Pádraig, that I was, that Greg Clifford had rented the body out to this folk spirit demon, you know? It was just a drunken haze and a kind of a joke that just grew legs. But there was some kind of energy or some kind of force, and it was there. It was a hell of a time, hell of a ride, and I just felt, I've always wanted to write a book, write a novel, and I was like, well, I have a subject here. I have something that's relatively authentic in a world where it's hard to really grab hold of original ideas.
Yeah, thank you. Well, thanks for sharing that, and obviously, when it comes to the, you know, art sharing, you know, community with the podcast, certainly, you know, check back in and wrap around with you. And probably the next time we chat, when we cover all those other artists, we can get more into the novel and lyricism. Thanks, Greg. It's great to see you. It's great to hear your voice, and many thanks.
This is Something Rather Than Nothing.